A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 243. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion of Raven. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon in England. Hello. Yes, this is a 6-part series from the 70s, 1977 to be precise. For older children, it was from the ATV, that's the Midlands part of the ITV network. 25-minute episodes, as I say, 6 of them. It's in colour. It mixes together quite an interesting blend of science, environmental concerns, Arthurian legend, and astrology, which is perhaps something we'll talk about in a moment. So there's some supernatural elements, there's some scientific elements. It all comes together, an interesting mix. And we also have some standing stones thrown in for good measure, because nothing implies the mystical more than standing stones.
Yes, absolutely. And in a more central role than that, we have this system of caves that has all of these archaeological things waiting to be discovered, with our team investigating those before they will be shortly turned into a nuclear waste dump location. Now, of course, things take a turn for the worse when Raven and Bill are trapped in the caves after a rockfall. And Raven quickly manages to get out, but the race is on to get equipment down and to free Bill from these caves before his air runs out. And it looks quite desperate, like they might not be able to make it, but Naomi, who is into all of these astrological things, convinces Raven that the answers to the layout of this underground cave system are held in these astrological symbols that are there.
Yes, she has to persuade the digging team, or Raven has to persuade the digging team, to change their approach, because the obvious way to get to Bill seems to be blocked by too much thick rock, and the drilling is going to take far too long, and he's going to run out of air before they get there. But if Raven and Naomi can convince the rescuers to try from a different angle, or in fact from a different cave altogether, well, it turns out that they find a much easier way through, and they do indeed break through and rescue Bill. But in doing so, they reveal perhaps some more of the mysteries of these strange caves.
Yes, that's right.
And of course, things are complicated, because just as this is all happening, and we're wondering whether they ought to be calling for Thunderbirds or something like that for this underground mine disaster, a TV crew arrive to get in on the action. They're interested in the environmental issues and, of course, the caves. And perhaps they've been, I don't know, intrigued by Naomi's articles for the local newspaper. But there is a TV presenter and his crew suddenly there, and they've come at just the right time to catch this dramatic rescue. And they're interested in the characters of Raven and Naomi, who seem photogenic, who seem just the thing for television. And maybe Naomi herself has a future in television journalism.
Yes, and the television reporter who shows up is actually quite a greasy and not entirely pleasant character.
Yes, he's a slightly odd, obsequious in a way, individual who obviously used to charming his way into situations by being slightly slimy. But he gets to the story and he finds a couple of young people who seem to be, you know, the perfect sort of hook to hang his story on. So there we go. It's all happening underground. And while this is all going on, and perhaps because of all this, Raven begins begins to get even more of an idea that it might be his role might be in to try and prevent the nuclear waste dump going ahead and destroying these caves. And we get closer hints to, you know, Raven's background and to some of the mythological stuff that's been implied here.
Yes, absolutely. And we get this idea of more and more ties to the Arthurian legends, as well as these sort of astrological things going on. And we get the idea that maybe the professor is Merlin to Raven's Arthur in some sort of strange connection to the past.
Yes, when I saw the first episode and we see this strange bird, it's a falcon called a Merlin, and it seemed to be following Raven and interested in Raven. I thought that was going to be the connection. But as you say, Brian, it's implied as the show progresses that actually the bird is in some way a reflection of the professor's character and his personality. And as you say, he is the perhaps the guiding intelligence for this young Arthurian character. So it's very heavily implied that's sort of what's going on here. Raven is in some way connected to the legend of King Arthur.
Yes, absolutely. So as you can see, we are definitely getting into sort of New Age and mystical kinds of things in this series. And it was something that you saw quite a bit of in the 1970s in television, I think because these ideas were popular in society at the time. In this serial, we have this idea that Raven has to be convinced by Naomi about astrology being this important thing and a tool that they can use and sort of a real thing.
Yes, we have to say there's quite a bit of astrology in Raven. And after Naomi has successfully convinced him that it holds the key to rescuing Bill, she'll go on to make further connections between the caves and the various signs they find below ground. And of course, it does present me, I think, with a bit of a problem, which is when we consider astrology, it does seem a bit strange and silly, which is perhaps unusual for a podcast where we quite happily discuss alien invaders with mind control powers, all sorts of supernatural spooks and monsters, even moon bases staffed by women in silver suits and purple wigs. But I did find myself slightly grating against astrology being used in one of these shows, Brian, I'm afraid.
Yes, it is. It does seem a little bit odd and dated to have it in there. And I think it's one of these things where in the presentation of it, it's almost as if they're presenting it as something that is a real thing rather than something as part of the science fiction or fantasy aspect of it. And that slightly gray area may be a little bit uncomfortable to us in the way that when we see the picture of Dorian Gray dealing with the idea of our actions showing in our appearance and our misdeeds showing in our appearance, we might struggle with that a bit because it's not clear if that's a science fictional type thing or if it's more something that was viewed as real at the time.
Of course, we have to acknowledge that in the 70s, there was lots of interest in this sort of stuff. Astrology was very popular, interest in standing stones and ley lines.
We do get some of these kinds of things in other shows from this general time period. The relaunched version of Quatermass in 1979 had sort of mystical type ideas, and it had standing stones in it. And we had sort of folk horror type things that we particularly talked about when we discussed the Owl Service in British Invaders 228 and 229.
Yes, if you want to hear us sort of really get into the whole folk horror theme that perhaps Raven is sort of on the edges of, then do go back and listen to our Owl Service episodes, which were not too long ago. But as you say, yes, we've got these other shows that have used similar themes. And of course, we've got the environmental concerns of Raven, which we have to emphasize. You know, this was very topical at the time. What do we do with our nuclear waste? We've seen other shows from the 70s, particularly obviously Doomwatch, which was really all about these sort of environmental issues, but also to a certain extent Survivors. And then two shows that sort of bracketed the 70s on either side, The War Game and Threads, which we have talked about, both discussing nuclear war in very, very sort of serious and scary fashion. So yeah, we've come across some of these environmental issues, and here we have a children's show that's sort of paying attention to them, and I think giving a fair bit of useful information about the dangers of what might be happening in these underground caves.
Yes, it did a reasonable job of that, I think. So we should talk about some of our own thoughts, the good and the bad, if you will. So, Eamon, what did you like about Raven?
Well, I particularly liked the start, the sort of initial setup. I liked Phil Daniels playing this sort of young rogue who's been sent out to the country to be fostered by this sort of lovely family or this lovely couple, the professor and his wife. Some interesting intrigue in the first episode when he learns about the caves, he learns about some of the stuff they've found down there. There's this weird bird. So I thought it started very well, nicely paced script to begin with, and certainly the sort of the cast, I think, giving excellent performances. They're pretty good throughout. What about yourself? What particularly stood out for you, Brian?
Well, I quite like the setting of the caves and some of the ideas of how the caves were used and the way that it tied into things from the past through the archaeological angle with the rush against the nuclear waste disposal thing coming in, which is quite a dated, very 1970s way of handling nuclear waste and way of discussing nuclear waste and issues. But nonetheless, I thought that worked very well, and especially the way the setting and the archaeology was used.
Yes, I mean, the underground sets of the caves, they're not bad at all, actually, for a 70s children's show. Obviously, it gets slightly difficult when they have to show the rescue attempt, so we don't get to see any of the heavy drilling equipment that they keep referring to. That's always off camera. But yeah, no, I thought the caves were pretty good. Who knows, maybe they were setting up the caves for a nuclear dump that in another British Invaders universe would go on to be the dump that they find in Edge of Darkness in the 80s.
Maybe so.
What did you think about the writing of the show?
I thought it was pretty good, but it was a little bit all over the place in the themes and ideas they were putting into it, in that they had all of these Arthurian ideas, which were interesting. And then they added the astrological things on top of that, which were interesting, but maybe not quite as good as the Arthurian stuff. And then they have the archaeology and the caves and the sort of nuclear things, and they have the standing stones showing up as another setting on top of it. It felt a little bit weighed down with all of these different things that become important to it as the show goes on. I think it was a little bit overburdened with all of these things.
Yes. I mean, in a way, it's a shame they couldn't have spent more time telling us about some of the finds in the caves, and in particular, the links to the legend of King Arthur and Merlin. And perhaps, as you say, it was a very 70s thing, but looking at it now, the introduction of all the astrology does seem a bit strange and dated, and an odd sort of avenue for the show to go down in the second half. But there you go. I suppose it was the 70s. That stuff was very popular, and the writers added it in here, hoping that it would keep us interested. It just looks a bit strange now, I think, Brian.
And it does give the character of Naomi something to do, but it would have been I think, more interesting to have it more focused on the Arthurian thing. So it was not badly written, but a little bit awkwardly weighed down with these things, I think.
Yes, I mean, we have the character of Raven and the Professor, and we hoped to find out a bit more about the mysteries of them, but we don't really get those in the second half of the show. And as you say, having introduced this sort of attractive young journalist, I guess they have to do something with her. So she gets to be the one who introduces the astrology and solves the riddle of the caves by using astrological symbols and so on. So, yeah, okay. It was, in some respects, a bit strange as it gets into the second half of the show. Doesn't look and feel too bad for a 70s children's production, as we've said. The set's pretty good. There's some nicely sort of bleak 1970s countryside as that we would be perhaps more familiar with from Survivors, with lots of mud around, it seems, Brian.
Yes, I did quite like the look, especially with things like when they were rescuing Bill and they finally get to him. It really did look like he was coming out of this uncomfortable, claustrophobic kind of place that he was trapped in. And some of those things I thought were done fairly well.
Yes, I suppose there's a couple of sort of potholing or spelunking, I think it's called in North America, sequences, which if you're at all claustrophobic, this, you know, it will give you unpleasant little twinges here and there in this show as they go underground and you feel that pressure of rock above them, particularly when characters are trapped. I think it's unfortunate that they perhaps have to do it again in the setting right at the end for the finale, that they have to sort of engineer another rock fall, having done it so successfully earlier on in the show. But there you go.
That's right. But all in all, I think a lot of these things worked fairly well. What did you not like as much in Raven?
Well, I guess I sort of hinted at it already. The fact that it does seem to not fulfill the promise of the early episodes in the second half of the series. You know, having introduced the idea of King Arthur and Merlin doesn't seem to do a great deal with it. We get this tremendously exciting cave rescue sort of early on, and then, you know, again, the excitement isn't really sort of carried on into the last three episodes. Plus, there's a very strange sequence to do with the standing stones and some people standing around the standing stones, and maybe there's a hint to what's going on with Raven and Merlin. But again, that's never really explained. It just sort of happens, doesn't it?
Yes, they try to use the standing stones as sort of a round table idea and something of a payoff to the Arthurian things. And I don't think that worked that well. I think for me, the drawbacks in this were things like that sequence not really working as well as it should have, and there being just too many ideas that they were trying to service in here with things like the astrological things and the standing stones and so on.
Yeah. It is a bit of a strange thing, as you say, an oddity. I did like the performances, you know, I must say, you know, if you're going to have anybody play a 1970s troubled teenager, then Phil Daniels was your chap. Here he is a couple of years before he'd appear in Quadrophenia, which would sort of make his fame. Interestingly, both he and Shirley Cheriton would go on to appear in the very popular TV soap EastEnders over here, although they were in, I don't think they appeared in the show at the same time. Shirley Cheriton was there when the show started, and Phil Daniels has been in it much more recently, I believe.
Yes, we often talk about the issues of having younger actors, whether it's children or teenagers, sort of older teenagers in this case, in shows, and the issues of, you know, that being difficult to orchestrate well, and a lot often comes down to how likable and charismatic the actors themselves are. And in this case, I think they did pretty well on that score.
Yes, the young actors are very good, and the whole cast, I think, is very good. It's nice to see Patsy Rowlands. Pity she couldn't be given slightly more to do. And Michael Aldridge as the Professor is very good, although he's having to sort of hint and imply, I think, some of the stuff about Merlin and his character, which doesn't really fully emerge until perhaps the final sequences in the last episode.
Yes, that's right. They do some nice things with that, and the actors are able to push those characters into being something a little more interesting than they might have been on the page.
And, of course, it's a show from the same team that gave us Children of the Stones in the same year. Another show, it's, of course, very memorable stand-in stones, these ones, this time real ones. And how often, Brian, have we ended up comparing other TV shows from the 70s to Children of the Stones?
Well, we have done it a few times, haven't we? And that was one that worked very well. And it has some elements in common with this, but I think the writers did a better job of ironing that one out. And they also had things like a stronger sort of mysterious, potentially villainous kind of character played by Ian Cuthbertson. We didn't have anyone like that to focus on in this.
No, that's true, actually. As you say, there's no real villain. And, of course, Children of Stones had a very memorable villain. It just, to me, it seemed that Raven was Children of the Stones light. And as I said, many times we've referred our listeners to that great series from the 70s, Children of the Stones, which for some reasons just has the power to sort of scare us, disturb us, intrigue us. It's a remarkable show. And it's one that I wonder whether we perhaps at some point ought to go back and revisit. Maybe our listeners would be up for some form of Children of the Stones rewatch, possibly organized through the Facebook group. I don't know. But if you're interested in that idea, do get in touch on the Facebook group. Maybe it's time for British Invaders to go back and have another look at that 70s show and see if it's as good as we remember.
Maybe so. So we should do our recommendations on this one. Eamon, why don't you start? What would you like to recommend?
Well, unfortunately, it's going to be another sort of sound clip that we could almost have on file, which is Eamon recommending that you go and watch Children of the Stones first. And if you're intrigued by that show and want to see more from the same writing team, then come to Raven, which, you know, does have the advantage. It's very easy to get hold of. It's only a tenner in the UK. But it's a sort of, again, there's Phil Daniels on the front cover with his thumb firmly up. But my thumb is, as ever, hovering somewhere in the middle and saying this is not particularly a great show from the 70s. Maybe one just for completists only, I would guess. What about yourself, Brian? How would you go on this one?
I'm going to be fairly close to that. I can't really recommend this one. It was okay and reasonably disposable, I guess. If you are the completist and you want to see all of these types of things from that era and all of the supernatural shows you can get your hands on, then this should be on the list, sure. But for the most part, no, I would say there are other things to look at first, and I wouldn't particularly recommend this one. I will say look at Doomwatch before you look at this one.
And of course, that's a show that's recently had a DVD release, I believe.
It has.
So, something to look at. So, yeah, perhaps some alternatives to look at first. Children of the Stones and Doomwatch. But as ever, you know, do keep buying these network DVD releases if you can, because it will hopefully encourage them to put out more of these shows that we want to get a look at.
So, in summary, Raven introduced us to a troubled teenager who was actually quite a good person and a very smart person, and gets involved with archaeology through this professor and his wife and this dig that is going on in this system of caves that are scheduled to be turned into a nuclear waste dump. So everything that can be recovered has to be recovered from this particular site. And we find there are Arthurian connections to that site, and perhaps even Arthurian connections to the characters themselves. And we get into the ideas of there being connections to astrology and star signs and this sort of thing. And there happens to be a set of standing stones nearby that also become involved. and we get this complicated series of things that bring us to these ideas about how these characters are continuing, in a way, the Arthurian legends.
Some interesting ideas, perhaps not fully realized, but certainly one to look out for if you found Children of the Stones an intriguing prospect as well.
Absolutely.
And of course, come back for more next time. It's Gerry Anderson time. It's our yearly Gerry Anderson show, and we're encouraging you to put on your special glasses, grab your secret agent briefcase, and step inside the big rat. You might have guessed that I'm particularly excited that next time we're going to be talking about Joe 90. Splendid stuff to come, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. Back to the Super Mario Nation stuff, which should be fun as always. Until then, you can visit us at BritishInvaders.com, or you can search for British Invaders on Facebook to find our Facebook group there. And we have always lots of interesting discussions going on there.
Yes, absolutely. Come drop by the Facebook group and join in the fun. And if you're listening to this show in the week that it's released, then come along, because there's a chance to win my copy of Raven on DVD. So join in the fun there. And also join in the fun on Mondays and Tuesdays at the Voice of Geeks Network. That's vognetwork.com, where you will find British Invaders is one of several geek-related shows, including the lovely Pod Culture and the Geek Card and several others. Come and drop by, have a listen to us, and also see if there's some other shows that might pique your interest.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for being with us. Until next time, it's Eamon in England also signing off.